Okay, I'll just hand over to Nikki and John. And first we'll go through, there's three written questions, and then we'll just stick up your hand from the floor and we can go.
We have three questions here. The first one being, would it be possible for Timanua to host your collection on a long-term basis? Have you approached them? We have a memorandum of understanding with Timanua, and they helped us enormously when we had to pack up. We had support from them all the way through. They are overloaded there themselves. They have no free storage space. I've been there into their storage areas, and they're absolutely chocker. They also have taken on loan, for safekeeping, isn't
safekeeping,
it?
Yeah.
The apothecary jars that John was talking about, and some of our very special priceless pieces and cabinets. So they've been very supportive, I have to say, at this stage. And if they could help us with more storage, they would.
Someone has asked, how quickly
do new healthcare developments come to New Zealand? I don't think there's not an easy answer to that. Certainly I can speak in terms of anaesthesia. The first general anaesthetic in New Zealand was done in the jail in Wellington in July 1847. I've been very fortunate. I went to Boston for the history meeting. I went to the Ether Dome, where the first public demonstration of ether was done in October 16th, 1846. Some of you may have seen that this is celebrated every year in New Zealand and Australia as Anaesthesia Day. I'm trying to do a bit of education. So other than recent expensive cancer drugs, I would say things, certainly in terms of things that I've been involved with, they come very quickly. Propofol, the anaesthetic induction agent, came to New Zealand in 88, 2 years before Australia. So in general, our systems for getting things approved and getting new things, we had sevoflurane, the volatile thing that is still being, one of the few things still left being used. They have been developed in Japan. I met the anaesthetist that was involved with that, the quiet gentleman. We had sevoflurane before the States and before Australia. The States had desflurane because of that. Baxter's bankrolled Eager, who was the big guy doing the research on it. I guess you would know in the news that the sort of cancer drugs, and that's just purely a cost-related thing. And I hate to say it, we oldies are going to have to put up with the capital gains taxes. That's the only way you're going to be able to pay for some of these things. With regard to William Morris, is this the same William Morris from Arts and Craft Movement? I don't think so. If you know the vintage car club crowd, you'll know that's where the Morris cars came from, because they got the Oxen Ford badge on. From what I know of William Morris and what Richard Salter and Robert McIntosh told me, I can't imagine he was very much into arts and crafts.
Okay. There's a lot of people with the same name. When I was looking up about Mickey Tyler, I found there's a novelist who published two books with the name and the same spelling, because it's an unusual spelling for me. But apparently it's not the same person.
I'm not in the arts and crafts movement either, but there is a well-known artist in England by the name of John Sendall, who is probably distantly related. We've all got Sendalls, we've got long foreheads and big faces. So I'm not the least bit artistic.
Okay. Any questions from the floor?
Yes.
This is just idle curiosity. I wanted to know what was the source of the human figures in the medical museum.
I didn't catch that.
Oh, you mean the dummies?
Yeah.
Some of them came from farmers, the surgeon here. No, they're not the agricultural farmers, the department store. The surgeon in the mock operating theatre. He had a funny leg. He was actually positioned in a funny... I don't know what he was demonstrating in the store, but he had a farmer's stamp on his buttock.
Before my time, David Warnock was good at scrounging things from all over the place. That's a very... You know, that was me. That was a posed photo for the paper.
Okay. Who designed all the layout in the medical museum? In some places, you know, highly professional. I know people who had years of training, and yet we've got these amateur museums where there's been some excellent displays. You people just got together, or you had some people from the museum?
I mentioned David Warnock actually just said, I'm going to put nursing things there, anaesthesia, and the eye stuff. You know. Just so I think it was just really his arrangement.
Yeah. Okay. I suppose we could add, given that they're looking for someone, what's the feeling after hearing the sorts of things that's available and that might be useful? What's the feeling among those of you here? Whether it's important that we try and find some way to have this on display?
Of course.
Yeah.
How much room would be required?
Yeah.
Well, somebody just asked.
That was the question I was going to ask.
When you think actually on the hospital site, we probably had from just these two bays here, I would imagine. Plus, they're very large.
Yeah. I mean, on the old acute mental health unit, it'd probably be about as big as these two bays here. And that lot right here was the nurse's office. The amount of space that's in this room, I guess, would be really nice. It'd be fabulous. We could put virtually all the stuff we have in somewhere this size. There is, I mean, I can say this politely within these four walls, there is local money and funding philanthropically that would provide a relocatable building, and we would like to see it on the hospital site, but the management can't justify it. They have to justify every cost that they have. And the real problem is that, as Mickey said, we only had gold coin donation. We don't have an income. We've had a number of monetary donations, but not really enough to employ staff and to maintain the building. That's a crucial issue. So to be alongside the Army engineers is one possibility, or Keisha Birch. Timana would be the most fantastic if there was space, but they just haven't got space.
If we were lucky enough to get somewhere in the town, like even with the Army Museum, we would have to up our game, we'd have to become more professional, we would have to charge, and we'd have to be open more often. And we would be prepared to do that if we could get more volunteers.
Mm. I mean, the Rugby Museum started off on the same basis. Mm. And the people in the town told most of those guys that they're idiots, it would never work. And now people come all across the world to see the Rugby Museum.
Yeah. Now when they... I'll just ask a question. When the museum was operating and open, how was that run? That was all volunteer medical staff from the hospital?
No, but we were... Small committee of volunteers.
Yeah, but we were funded to... I've got mine on. We were funded to a degree by the hospital to pay for our power, and we didn't pay any other rates or anything like that. So we were, by grace and favour, very privileged to have that for so long, I guess.
And the Hospital Postgraduate Medical Society and the Combined Medical Staff, which of course I was a member of, had various donations, people that left money in wills and bequests, and they provided some sort of donations that have helped us for storage and things. Okay.
I don't know whether you've already said this, but are there other medical museums in New Zealand?
Yes.
And is there I mean, you know, you raise the idea that people come to Palmerston North as, you know, almost a bit of a tourist attraction. Is it possible to sort of combine them? And maybe Palmerston North takes a lead in it? I mean, to me, it seems like it's necessary because it seems, from what you said, that New Zealand has played a part in certain medical advances. And there's also social history in this too, isn't there? The way that babies are treated and, you know, the dental service, you know, it really is quite necessary.
So instead of Palmerston North being just the drug capital, we could also be the drug capital.
There seems to be a general trend with New Zealand at the moment, and even in Auckland, is it Auckland where they have a virtual one? It's all online.
Yes, they're very lucky that they've got the medical school there with the permanent staff that can be involved, and it's a very large medical history society in Auckland, and I volunteer and help there. And there are only two other significant museums that I know of, and it's Whangarei and Hill-Morton at Christchurch, and they're both going through the same problems that we've been through, the Hill-Morton being evicted because the building it's in is an earthquake proof and a big bulldoze to build new mental health facilities. And Whangarei started in exactly the same way as David has retired, and lived it, and it was the old medical superintendent's house, and nobody was using it, so he just used it as a storage and threw everything in there. And now the bean counters are coming along saying we can't afford to maintain it, we can't justify the expense, and it's been closed. So yes, we could do that. We really need a succession plan, and we need some more younger people to come along and work with it.
But the other side of it is too, we were told in no uncertain terms that, you know, if the hospital is in deficit or in the red for $30 million, what's the museum? Why should we be supporting the museum, sort of thing? You know, I think it's a sign of the times to a degree.
But if you've been following the local medical politics, you'll know that there's a Palmerston North, I forget the exact title, Hospital Foundation. So that Rangatahi and various other influential sources, I can't, one of them is commercially sensitive, I can't tell you who it is, but I do know, because I know the chairman of the trust, there is significant local money that is already going into buildings, it would be in the MAP and various, and the children's unit and ED has all been funded externally. And the other thing that's probably happening in the background that some of you may or may not be aware of, because I was a shareholder and director of Crest Hospital, when Murray George L left, he came and joined us on the board, and I said, well, now you can actually learn how you run your own business. It won't be like you've been up the road. He said, yeah, it's just like the freezing works. He said, you know, the animals come in and meat goes out. Okay, Murray. And then of course he said, oh, you've got all this extra, what's happening over there? And I said, because when we went into the joint venture with Crest, we immediately said, what do we want to have here in 5 years' time? We want to have World Health Organization, extra large, the highest standard of operating theatres. So we built two 65 square metre operating theatres that were the best in the lower North Island. And what was the staff? And the staff tea room was all wired and plumbed. So the plan was 3 weeks, the walls come down, reline, you've got another operating theatre. There's a big slab of concrete, the facilities can go in there. There's another space next to it for another procedure room that can be gastroenterology. This work is going to come from the public hospital because they can't keep up. Now, that staff tea room is a fifth operating theatre doing 10 operating sessions a week at public hospital patients. So, again, my politics from being a young radical left winger has changed quite dramatically. A public-private partnership is the only way our health service is going to survive. It's happening by stealth. You know, St George's in Christchurch, I think it's 38% of their work now is public hospital patients. Okay, that's just off my 10 point.
So there's no room for the museum in one of the private hospitals?
Well, I've been there and approached that. Yeah, I mean, I'm not involved. I was one of the original shareholders of Aorangi Hospital, and we went into Crest with Southern Cross. Us old guys have sold our shareholding to a younger group, and you'll see in the near future there are plans underway for further expansion. There's a greenfield site out at Milson Line that's going to have a new big unit there, and they've already got plans for expanding on the Carroll Street site. There's a large storage unit there, but they're using that. There isn't enough space there. Yeah, we've actually looked and measured. Yeah, but the new Milson Line is a possibility. But again, unless we can be alongside something that's functioning and can help fund, it's going to be that bridge.
Yeah.
Have you applied to charitable foundations at all, the Lotteries Commission?
Not the Lotteries Commission, but Susan Abassa is one of our trustees. She was a museum studies lady from Massey and helped a great deal when we were packing up. There was funding. We got some COVID funding and some museum funding from to Papa and places like that. So, yeah, she's very much onto that.
People are not very keen to give you money for the storage. If you have a project, or if we wanted to get into a new building that we needed some funds for, I think we'd have a lot more luck in giving.
Is that your aim, to get into a display space rather than have them stored, but to actually make the public sort of
something that the public can visit and enjoy, because it becomes very difficult. We have to store things, particularly some of the finer objects. We have to store them very carefully, and to get them out and put them back is a huge task.
So this medicine chest that you see there, that was wrapped in three layers of special materials, and all the things have got special Japanese tissue inside it. And Susan helped us with that. It was quite a complicated exercise. They weren't just thrown into a garage. They had to be vermin proof and damp proof.
So we're lucky
to be able to see it then today. Okay. Thank you both very much, Megan and John. I think you get the prize for having the most amazing visual display of all the contributors to our series. And I think we could probably agree on which is the scariest instrument. The one we all fondly remember.
Health and safety and political correctness has prevented me from bringing some of the things that I would like to have demonstrated. I mean, Mickey was talking about the mercury, and of course some of you may remember your doctor doing your blood pressure with a mercury column.
Yes.
People often ask me, what's 120, where do you get that from? It's 120 millimetres of mercury. So it was actually measured on a mercury column. Of course, that's health and safety. And there's a few things in the past that, and now, if we judge things of the past and today's standards, they don't appear kind and nice. And like electrocompulsive therapy, I mean, that was quite widely, it's generally safely used in the past, and it's still used in a more controlled and with better technology. But it's gotten a bad rap, and so we can't. And all of us, Mickey and Marilyn and I all learnt our anatomy with human bones.
And now we're too sensitive now.
Yeah. And generally these came from people that would leave their bodies to medical science. Yes. But we can't display those.
We are having a display hopefully in the library on the second floor on the 11th day of the 11th month.
Memorial Day.
Will that be some of your World War One?
Yes, indeed. Peter Hurley, the medical officer at Ahakia, is very heavily involved, and Evan
Torrance,
who's been a military commander. They're both involved with that side of military displays. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I have a small token here for you jointly. So thank you very much, Mickey and John, and also for the team who helped unpack, set up, and soon repack, I suppose, all this stuff. Thank you very much.
Next time, we have a talk called Taking a Bet on the Future from Karis Evans and Cindy Lilburn of Te Manawa. So yeah, perhaps we can have a quiet word.
Yeah.
So would you please join me in thanking once again our students.